this is Uwe Boll. If you want to help support the podcast on this network, go to rogueintel.com. Thank you and go fuck yourself.
This program is not censored.
Consider yourself warned.
Lights, camera, action.
When a script is written that is so bad that no one will film it, two men will bring it to life just so they can mock it. This is Table Reads.
So the movie's kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Table Reads. With Sean McBee and Trevor Thompson.
With special guest Jimmy Williams.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Table Reads, episode 46. It's going to be part 3 of The Crow 3 Resurrection, and we are joined not only by Jimmy, but also by Danny Gorbachev, a buddy of mine who has a beard.
It's true.
I don't know anything else about him. That's
all the qualifications
really,
of being John's friend. Is.
pretty much sums it up.
Not a beard, but he has one.
So, just a reminder to everybody, Table Reads is part of the Rogue Intel podcast network, so check us out at rogueintel.com, like Uwe Boll said there at the beginning of the show. There's other good shows on there, and I'm not even going to tell you what they are. Just go and discover it and find out, and you know that way they can get the page clicks and whatever.
Yeah, help them out, guys. Come on.
So, yes, do that. And should we just get into it?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's discuss what happened so far.
Oh, sorry. You said get into it. You mean get into it.
Previously on Table Reads.
Fucking egg.
There was a firefight!
Ooh, my man said, just go for it, man. It'll work.
So, here's what happened, and it's going to be real fast. Nobody interrupt. There was a police showdown straight out of an 80s cop movie, a la Beverly Hills Cop, at some docks in San Francisco. Everybody escaped from that, except for like one dude that got punched to death by our protagonist. And then our protagonist was getting married, and in typical cliched motherfucking fashion, a helicopter comes over the hill and just opens fire on the entire wedding and kills our hero's wife. Our hero jumps onto the helicopter. Yes, you heard that right.
Onto.
And then gets shot and falls through a tree and hits the ground, and apparently he's been shot in the head, and he's now in a hospital in a vegetative state for the past, what did they say, 2 years?
2 years.
2 years. So now it's 2 years later. Our hero is alive, but vegetative from getting shot in the face. And his partner, Sarah, comes to visit him. Our hero's name, by the way, is Kato.
And this that's not racist.
This is
that's not
90s.
Racist.
And this was the late 90s, 97.
97, this was written by the writer of Die Hard. And, you know, I need to look it up because I mentioned Beverly Hills Cop there. I think he wrote Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, the good one. The one with that super gun. You remember that super gun in back in...
Yeah, dude, I've seen them all. I remember.
Yeah, yeah, that super gun was reused.
John Landis directed that one.
That super gun was reused in Firefly.
Was it really?
As Jane's favorite weapon, was named it, Vera.
Did they keep the cassette player in it? There was a whole fucking thing about it, having a cassette player and a microwave and all this extra shit.
I don't remember that. Oh,
they dude, have to have that or it won't be a good reference.
Dude also wrote Commando.
Oh, really?
This dude wrote, like...
all the bullshit.
This guy was the 1980s fucking action movie... like, motherfucker.
Fuck Commando.
Jimmy doesn't like Commando.
It was a I'm piece of shit when it came idea. Out and we knew it.
Why don't you like Commando, Jimmy?
Because it was too over the top. I mean, the body count was just ridiculous. It was just so much. Like, look at my arms, my biceps. Look at my shoulders.
Well, you know what? It would certainly make sense as to why, you know, we're on what?
Like if you was a Claude fan and you had to look at his ass through the whole thing. That's what it was like. It's like, you know, look, I know he does karate and he got a nice ass, but come on.
Yeah.
You know, like that's
there's.
All right, hold on. So I'm just going to go through his filmography a little bit. Running Man, Die Hard. I'm only reading the good stuff. I'm skipping over Super Carrier and Bad Dreams. Die Hard 2. 48 Hours was apparently in there, but I guess... Oh, yeah. That was longer ago than I thought. Yeah, I wrote 48 Hours. 82. Die Hard 2. Hudson Hawk. Motherfucker wrote Hudson Hawk.
That's pretty good.
They didn't think so at the time.
No, and they didn't. And I thought so for a while, but I tried to watch it again 2 weeks ago, and it was like, stop.
Really?
Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah, there's parts of it that are cool, like Richard Grant and Sandra Bernhardt, but, you know, the whole movie as a whole, no.
Beverly Hills Cop 3. He created a TV show called Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
What?
And he actually wrote Steven Spielberg's greatest film.
Jaws?
The 1994 classic, The Flintstones.
Oh, okay, the second best
one. Oh, and he wrote the terrible 90s Stallone Judge Dredd movie.
Oh, and that's not terrible. That's the one with the comedic genius of Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
And the great acting of Armand DeSante. We're going to war. We're going to war.
Oh, yeah. You know, he started in such television classics, writing episodes for the $6 Million Man and Knight Rider.
God damn, he should be good.
He's been writing
a long fucking time.
He doesn't have to be good anymore. He gets hired because of his name, apparently, and the stuff.
Dude, you know how old I am? I was fucking like six when the $6 Million Man came out. 6 or 7 years old. These motherfuckers should be... I mean, by the time you get to Die Hard, you should be at a really good level, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was at a good level then, and then he fell off. He probably got Alzheimer's or something.
Strippers. Hollywood stripper bitches.
We need to read that book, that Die Hard book. Apparently, that's like an amazing book that all you have to really do is just transcribe it.
So,
yeah.
Why don't we jump into the script?
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's go.
Fade in.
I have to give a little bit of backup because this guy doesn't really use slug lines. So we're at the hospital and we're cutting to a close angle of Julius, who is one of the brain damaged crazy people there.
Ramage.
He has memory problems and he was voiced by Danny.
So get ready, Danny. So,
all right.
Cut to Julius, close. He has just discovered...
Why is that in quotes?
Because he doesn't have a memory.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got mad for no reason. I got mad. I went from 0 to 100 right away.
Yeah.
But when you put again Trevor, you don't have to put the quotes around.
Look, I'm hungry. Okay?
Trevor is...
I got high knowing pizza was coming, and I got a little bit higher than I should have.
Trevor's on edge.
I'm on edge, literally. Look at my
those sitting. Motherfuckers, you gotta, like, he guards his plate and shit, wanna bite you. I'm fucking hungry.
We've yet to get through the first sentence. Come on, people.
We have no hope.
He has just discovered the photograph in his pocket again. As he puzzles over it, we widen to see the group breaking up.
Widen. Okay. This is just baddish in mid-speech. Thank you all for joining us. Let me turn the music down. Thank you all for joining us. It's been stimulating.
Why are you
always
echoey?
Because that's when you do in your speech. You have a mic.
She's in a tiny room.
Oh.
It's like a fucking AA thing, like a circle of chairs.
Well, then shut up, because they're usually in a big open area in those places. It's been stimulating, as always. Until next time.
She gets up, leaves. She pauses beside Cato, touches his wrist. Then she walks over to Waldo, speaks quietly. He nods. Why are we doing this like a caveman?
Fag hit, ugh.
Angle on Waldo. Fag. He comes over, starts to wheel Cato down the hall. We hold on them as they leave. And then camera discovers Clarence Sherman.
K. Cameron's a character, apparently.
PhD. His eyes narrow, boring in on Kato.
It's boring, all right.
Clarence looks around, spots Baddish. Or Batiche. Let's do Batiche.
I like Baddish better.
Yeah, she's got like big ears.
Yeah, exactly.
Covered pointy in fur. Teeth.
And when she got webbing in her arm.
In her, between her fingers.
Pointy nose. Blind as a bat.
Spots Baddish.
Yeah, and her shit looks like Whiteout.
I'm Baddish.
Leave it upside down.
We stay with him as he catches up to her. Who wants to be Clarence? Should I be Clarence?
Jimmy wants to be Clarence.
Yeah, because I'm black, right?
No, and because...
Clarence, black.
No, because...
Jimmy, he's got a PhD. He's got a PhD. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's still black.
Yeah, well, he's like... do him like Bill Cosby, then. Do him like Cliff
Huxtable.
The last
time you saw a white Clarence.
Fucking True Romance.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Yeah, there you go. How about that?
There you go.
How about that?
In a Quentin Tarantino movie, a white character with a black name. Who would have guessed?
Where there's a white guy who thinks he's black.
Drexel Spivey.
He thinks he's Elvis, when Elvis thinks he's black.
Now I know I'm pretty, but I ain't as pretty as no pair of titties.
Oh, that's right.
And that guy played Beethoven.
Yeah.
Dr. Baddish, I'd like to talk to you about that patient of yours, John Kato. Why is he in your processing group? That's for high-functioning mental patients of normal intelligence. Kato is completely catatonic.
Baddish breaks her quick stride, turns to face Clarence.
Look, Clarence, we both know your doctorate is in hotel management, so don't start diagnosing my patients. And for your information, Kato is not catatonic.
She walks away.
Mm.
Indignant, he catches up.
Not catatonic.
He opens the file, reads as they walk.
Severe damage to the parietal lobe. Complete destruction of the perceptive fibers. As a result, patient cannot feel pain, heat, cold, or any physical sensations. If that's not catatonic, I'm a moron.
You're a moron. Yes, that is an accurate description of the physical damage to his brain. But everything else, memory, speech, locomotion, those things are all intact. That's why he's in the group. So we can start making human connections again.
She's reached her goal, the vending machine.
There, finally. I want an orange crush.
She opens her purse.
Let me hold that for you. Well, doctor, if he's capable of walking, talking, and thinking, then why is he doing an imitation of Caesar salad at the taxpayer's expense? Huh?
Baddish stops. Trapped. She turns. Sighs.
I don't know.
Money changes everything.
I know, that's right. I've tried everything.
He has really great insurance.
He has really great, yeah. The only possibility is that at the time of physical injury, there was tremendous psychological trauma as well. Kato's wife was murdered right in his arms. It may be that the undamaged portion of his mind just shut down to protect itself from that memory. Yeah, because that's a medical explanation.
She takes out change, goes to the candy machine.
Then how do you cure that?
You bring his wife back to life.
Yeah, and you train these fucking, these ravens that are supposed to be crows to fly in front of exploding trees. I saw the trailer for the second one. That's where I'm getting that from. You keep him in physical therapy so his muscles don't atrophy, and you wait and hope that the world will somehow push the button. Damn!
She said that because this machine has eaten her quarter.
She turned into Prince there at the minute, at the end. Shut up! Already. Damn.
The button?
She wiggles the knob, then the little change door.
Yeah, the button. Might be a piece of music, the smell of a familiar kitchen, the voice of a friend, or...
Hold on. He's going to experience the smell of a familiar kitchen at the hospital?
Yeah.
In group?
Because he loves the kitchen at the hospital.
Yeah.
The voice of a friend or the face of an enemy.
Bum, bum, bum. And that is the most painfully obvious foreshadowing I've ever
it really is. Yeah.
Experienced.
Anything that pushes hard, anything that punches hard enough on the pain that locked up his brain. This is so gothic.
The pain in his brain.
The pain in his brain. Struck the second time, sometimes the motor of the mind starts up again.
That's your theory.
No, Jimmy, that's not what she
said. I'm with Clarence on that one. Bitch, that's what you got?
Yeah.
That's your theory. Yeah.
Yes.
She kicks the vending machine, gets her candy bar.
Sometimes it works.
Cut to exterior, hospital, day. Sarah, we've been through three scenes, basically.
Yeah.
At this point.
I don't know what's going on.
Exterior, hospital, day. Sarah comes out. A car cruises slowly alongside her. Always a good sign. A big, good-looking young galoot named Tony is driving.
Galoot.
God damn.
He's,
God damn.
Okay, we just described him as good-looking. I want to say that the description of him is good-looking.
Yeah.
The next line is, he's not as good looking as he thinks he is.
Well, that's because he's a galoot.
So he's good looking for a galoot. This just gets more and more racist.
I think
a galoot is somebody that thinks they look good, but they're not looking that good.
I don't know.
The big galoot?
I think. God, you can never talk with you two.
Tony.
I think I want to hear Danny's Italian Tony guy.
Yeah. Do a real galoot, Danny.
Hey, doll, wanna take a mustache ride?
Don't you have to start shaving first? We tighten as she gets in. The accoutrement in the car. The accoutrements in the car and the crackle of a police radio makes us realize it's an unmarked police car.
Is it?
We on a call?
Ghostbusters.
Oh,
it's not my line, is it?
No, it's Tony's line. Come on.
Nah, look. Back to the division for paperwork. How's your friend?
Better.
Bullshit. Guy at the station, they talk. Elvis will wake up before he does.
I don't want your opinions any more than your come-ons, okay? There's always hope. Like Scarlett said, tomorrow's another day.
Shoot him for that! Shoot him for that!
Fuck you.
Fiddle Shoot D him. Fucking D. They drive away. Camera pans across the street. Two men, Custis and Stokes, are in a parked car.
That's me and you, Sean.
Cops.
Custis photographs the cops with a digital camera, which must have been great in 1997. I got 0.3 megapixels of this bitch.
I still got some of those pictures.
Cut two. Interior, Biodyne Pharmaceuticals, day. Wyden from a flush-mounted desk monitor. The digital photos we saw taken earlier are being downloaded.
This guy loves the word Wyden.
Custis and Stokes are seated here, giving their report to a man who sits back to the camera, looking at the city below. It's probably not Byron. I don't think it's Byron. Do you think it's Byron?
I don't think so.
All right, who's Custis?
I am. What nationality is Custis?
I have no idea.
I'm going to go with something Eastern European.
Okay.
But like the Dirty Harry ones.
What do you mean? Like,
make him Armenian or something.
No.
No, that's not right. That's not an Armenian name.
I don't know what the fucking Armenian name is.
It might be Turkish.
Turkish, yeah. Turkish. Yeah. Trevor asked, and he's like, now I'm in over my head.
Trevor's like, I don't know what the fuck Turkish people's like.
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, I only knew one Turkish person my whole life, and it was a woman.
You know, in your search for racist stereotypes, so many, so little time. You know? Pick one, motherfucker.
All right, fine. Here we go. She come today, same as every week.
Camera circles the room as Custis speaks.
He'll be Borat.
Some other men, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it'll work.
Some other men stand around the desk. We realize with a start that we recognize some of these people. Pring, Acer, and Terrell.
Ow. Hard to kill, boy, Terrell. Hard to kill.
But all have changed. Not like the slight changes of hairstyle and wardrobe on Sarah and Badish. Here the changes are deliberate. Exaggerated. Like when John Mulaney describes going back to another doctor 2 years later, and he says, and that same orderly was there, wearing a pair of glasses this time, to show that time had passed.
That's true.
It's as if these people wanted to change as much as possible, but only on the outside. Fuck you, only on the outside.
Yeah, that shit was way unnecessary.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
That whole thing is unnecessary.
There's so much unnecessary stuff in the script.
All right.
He could have stopped after it deliberate and just went to Terrell.
Yeah. Jimmy, read your line.
And the doctors? Does she talk to them about medicine, research, pharmaceuticals?
No. No, and we checked.
Stokes? Who wants to be Stokes?
Danny.
I'll have it, Stokes. Yeah, I went in last week. Did my vending machine repairman schmoozed with the nurses? Pay attention to the ugly ones. They talk up a storm. This gash is definitely not working on a case. All she does is visit this patient.
He called her a gash.
I like this guy.
That worked for that voice very well.
This
too.
Gash is definitely not working on a case.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead and finish that.
All she does is visit this patient.
This
as Stokes fumbles through some notes, Custis comes up to his rescue, tweaking the equipment.
John Cato used to be her partner, former SFPD police detective, retired 2 years ago, a full metal disability pension, no immediate family, only visitor is surveillance suspect, Jean Dobry.
The last figure the camera finds is leaning back in a luxurious chair in the shadows. A
luxurious chair.
But now it leans forward into the light. It's Byron. Oh, no. Did anybody see that coming?
We all did. We all totally called it.
Clean shaven now. Hair marcelled back, whatever that means.
What does that mean?
Body.
It's got like a Band-Aid in the back of it.
Body Armanized. Only the driven eyes are the same.
Oh, God.
He looks up at Terrell.
Who's Byron?
I think Danny was Byron. Or Jimmy. Jimmy was Byron.
God damn it, Jimmy.
So, she's not interested in me. I thought more of an impression.
Thought I made more of an impression.
How could you, Conrad Byron, right. Didn't exist until 2 years ago?
He taps Sarah's image on the video screen.
And she can stop existing whenever you say.
Pring and Acer look up expectantly, sensing action. But Byron rocks in his chair.
They're ready to cap a nigga.
I know, that's right. Pensive. They're like, what are we doing here?
They're ready to cap a woman. Yes. Yeah.
Let's go shoot us a dame.
Shoot us a bitch, man. No. She's been chasing smoke for 2 years, looking for a man who doesn't exist anymore. Killing her would bring an investigation.
Killing her would bring an investigation? Do you need to say that out loud?
To these motherfuckers, he has to paint a picture because they ready to bust a cap.
You know, police. Have you heard of them?
I celebrate their entire catalog.
When someone gets murdered, they do this thing.
Unless they come up missing, and then they try to figure out if they're missing.
But that also is an investigation.
And we don't want no investigation.
All right, finish your line.
We don't need to attract attention, not with high-profile drug ready to hit the market.
That everything?
Not quite. We're going over your pharmacy inventory, and there seems to be some discrepancies. Ether, dimethylamine, oxalicloide.
Why would I know anything about that?
Because they're the key ingredients for making crack cocaine in a street laboratory, like the one you set up, you know, on St. Vincent, on South Vincent.
He looks coolly at Stokes, who has the sense to fold his hand.
Okay, you got me, Mr. Byron. I thought maybe I could do a little thing on my own, but you're right. Don't even say it. How could it be my own taste when I didn't even pop up for the materials? One thing you gotta know is, I never touch the stuff myself. I don't smoke, drink, nothing. You can have everything back. The chemicals that are left, the money I made.
We have enough of both, thank you. And now, thanks to you, we have exposure. I don't like exposure, Stokes. We're on the verge of a big government contract. We can't risk our reputation for pennies.
Your reputation? You're pushing drugs for the government. I'm pushing them on the street. What's the fucking difference?
Way to nail that line.
That is a profound philosophical question, Stokes. Perhaps you'll help us answer it in the years to come.
You mean you're gonna let me go?
I mean, we're always short on donor organs for our tissue banks, especially young, healthy donors who never smoke or drink.
Stokes jumps up. Too late. Apparently, Terrell has drawn...
Already,
Terrell has drawn and aimed a silencer equipped 40 caliber. Thup, thup.
Thup, thup.
Stokes. It's silence, dude. It's thup, thup.
I don't have a thup, thup.
So don't play anything. It says thup, thup in the directions that I read it.
Yeah, you better get the silencer sound. What the hell?
Stokes, shot in mid-wanna escape leap, arcs almost gracefully to the floor.
Fuck you.
Did you have a stroke while you were writing that sentence?
Oh my god.
Then slides across the polished marble like Tom Cruise.
Mr. Byron, Dr. Fields called. She wants to see you in the lab right away.
Tell her I'm on my way, Janice. Oh, and Janice, have Quinn and Baker come in here. I want my office swept again for bugs.
He stands, closes the computer file on Sarah. It winks out. Because that's how computers work.
Have Mr. Stokes dismantled, Mr. Terrell. Try not to damage too much of the merchandise. We could get prices for all the parts.
You know, I think that would be a good time to take a break a little early in this episode.
Yeah.
But we'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Table Reads will return after this brief word from our sponsors.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. And I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that. He's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Hey, it's Clint Daly, host of the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. You know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you our own unique outlook on the world of sports. You know, we try to give you some actual insight and maybe a common sense approach to sports. Whether it's breaking news, some of the biggest games, or even some sports history, check out the Daily Dose Sports Podcast now on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. The Daily Dose, your daily dose of sports and sarcasm.
TableReadsPodcast.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lights, camera, action.
So the movie's a kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Now, back to Table Reads. Now part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
All right, I hope you guys learned something.
Jimmy, did you learn anything while we were gone?
I learned while you were gone that a cop can't get through the police academy without legs.
Huh. It's important that you learn that.
Yeah.
All right. So Byron has just ordered Mr. Stokes dismantled. And now we go to the reception area. Janice nods to two big men, Quinn and Baker. They nod knowingly, go into the office as Byron comes out.
Make sure you sweep under the rug.
Camera follows Byron as he crosses the penthouse floor. He presses ranks of the impressive high-tech medical machines his company supplies. As he is about to hit the elevator button, the elevator opens and Dr. Annabelle Fields storms out. a large piece of cardboard under her arm.
How do you like that name, Jimmy? Annabelle Fields?
I actually like that name.
I do too.
Around 40, looking a decade younger because she gets up at 6 to pound a punching bag so she can deal with all the assholes in her life.
Yeah, we know that from just looking at her.
Yep.
That name.
Right now, her chief asshole is Byron.
Dr. Fields, I was just on my way down to see you.
I guess we should figure out who Dr. Fields is. What the hell is going on?
Yeah. Good one, John. It's a good choice.
She flipped.
Mid-transatlantic was that? Crazy.
She sounds cunty, whatever it is.
That was the idea.
Yeah.
She flips over the cardboard, a mock-up of an advertisement. It shows happy, vacant-eyed workers on some public infrastructure project. The multiracial cast and the color-coordinated hard hats have the slick appeal of a soft drink ad. Only the name, Civicalm, and the illustration of a prescription bottle in the corner inset tells us this is an ad for a drug and not a gum or cigarette or soft drink like you said 2 seconds ago.
Oh, Jesus.
How can you plan a campaign for a drug I haven't even finished beta testing?
Doctor, there's nothing wrong with contingency planning. If we wait until all our ducks are in a row before we plan, we...
She puts her hand firmly on his back, steers him into the elevator. Could end up with some very dead ducks. Hit 12. Byron hesitates, not used to being addressed in this manner. But he complies. The door's shut. Cut 2. An elevator. Lab floor. Day. The elevator opens. Fields and Byron exit. Walk through a room full of laboratory animals in cages.
Oh, those assholes.
Man is the real villain in this movie.
There's everything from rats to rabbits to dogs and chimps. They approach a pneumatic door. Fields hits the control and it whooshes open.
Whoosh. Ah, this guy wants to be published so bad.
Other side.
Writers.
They walk into noise and static. Reverse angle. Fields' assistants are using a powerful MMR CAT scan. Okay, MMR is the mumps, measles, and rubella vaccine. So are they doing a CAT scan for mumps, measles, and rubella? Is that what's happening?
Are you suggesting, Sean,
that this guy doesn't do his research?
The screenwriter is not researching this stuff properly.
Well, it is only the revision.
I shudder to think, Sean, that this man...
Jesus, Raul, come on.
I shudder to think that this man did not do his research.
Jesus, Raul.
Sean, need I remind you, Die Hard.
Jesus,
48
Raul.
48 hours.
Shut up!
And that's it.
Jesus, Raul. Don't use that without the warning light. Already, Fields' pens are rattling in her pockets. Byron's tie tack jerks away from his chest. Okay. What he meant when he said MMR CAT scan was he meant MRI,
yeah.
Which is not a CAT scan,
no.
Nor an MMR.
It's an SUV, it's a VCR, CUW.
I wish I was successful enough to just write shitty scripts that would get bought and nobody made them.
He has a doctorate at BYOB. I don't know. Fuck it.
Byron's tie tack jerks away from his chest and close clangs onto the side of the MMR.
Back to scene. I bet that's coming up, right?
Wider. As the assistants shut down the machine, the tie tack falls to the floor. The mortified assistants scramble to get it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Byron.
No harm done.
Get lost now.
I love your voice for her, dude. Sean's tapping into his inner cunt.
You know what it is? It's John Mulaney's sassy woman voice.
It does sound very Mulaney-ish.
They quickly exit through the pneumatic door. Also, a pneumatic door?
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't...
Those are doors that would go... They're air-powered doors? Where are we?
What year is it?
Right?
It's 90s Futureverse.
That's how they do it in the lab.
Except we had automatic sliding doors when I was a small child, and none of them were pneumatic.
No, they just opened.
The last time a door actually, like, opened with a pop hiss was, like, 60s Star Trek.
Yeah. Actually, they did it on Next Gen, too.
Oh, that was just continuity.
Well, how did the doors work in 28 Days Later?
Oh, shit, I don't remember. I was watching the movie because it was compelling. It was compelling, unlike this
Well, at the very beginning of it, they break into this animal laboratory.
Look, you're asking the wrong guy. I don't remember.
Me neither. That's why I was asking. That's all.
Okay. That went nowhere.
I was thinking maybe doors like that were in those kind of labs for the animals or escape or I don't know. Hmm. Maybe he's just writing badly.
You know what? That's a long shot, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe this is badly written.
Badly written? Okay.
I'm just going to go out.
I don't know. Do you think? Is that possible?
I don't know. This guy wrote Die Hard.
Who are we to judge?
Who are we to judge the guy who wrote 48 Hours?
They quickly exit through the pneumatic door. Fields moves further along to a computer workspace. Sorry about that, Ace. Take a chair.
I don't like the tone of your voice. I am the head of this company.
Okay, two chairs. She hits the buttons on her keyboard. A video window appears on the computer screen. Footage of a white rat in a cage.
Oh, that's fucking... That's artsy.
You see this? Civicalm. Normal dose for a healthy adult rat. She hits the button. Another cage. Another rat. Then another... Normal dose for an adult. Normal dose for an adult.
Seems fine.
Try this. She hits another key. Now we see one mouse after another, staggering, twitching, dying.
Aww.
Normal dose for an adult. Normal dose for an adult. Ditto, yada, and yada.
Well, obviously the dosage was wrong.
No, it wasn't.
Wow, she's a real cunt.
That's what I'm going for.
Good book. Way to go.
She stands. There's just a variation in the weight of adult rats of 20 to 30 grams. Not very much, but just enough to make the normal dose for one rat a fatal dose for another.
I don't see your concern.
Where the fuck is the crow?
There's no problem with Civicom. Just with the subjects.
Look, we're only like a third of the way through the script.
That's some draconian shit right there. It's like if they're dying, it's not the fucking fault of the medicine. It's them.
No problem. If you extrapolate a gram variation to humans, you're talking about 4 pounds. People gain and lose 4 pounds in a week. And people weigh from 90 pounds... Wait, and people...
Weigh from 90 pounds to pounds.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't...
No,
you're having a stroke.
No, you.
And people weigh.
He was while he was writing this.
And people weigh from 90 pounds to pounds. There's no way we can standardize the dosage.
Relax, doctor. It's under control. Toleration variation is routine in this industry.
Yes, but people aren't going to tolerate this variation.
Ain't gonna. That's a very important word in this script.
Oh yes, especially for this doctor lady.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes, but people ain't gonna tolerate this variation. They're gonna drop fucking dead! That's taking sedation a little too far.
They're gonna drop fucking dead!
Violent Stans uses his board of directors meeting voice.
Dr. Fields, the United States government has contracted us to develop a reliable, low-cost sedative without psychological side effects of previous hypnotics. My research says we have done this.
Your research might as well be printed on toilet paper, because that's all it's good for.
Oh, snap!
Somebody think they bulletproof.
She's sassy than a muh.
She hits the computer. A graph comes up, then a DNA footprint... Other information.
That's crazy. By the way, where the fuck is the crow?
Look, man, we're only like he's a sixth of the way into the script. Yeah. Like,
he's drooling.
We're on page 37. Going into page 38.
Look, don't you remember the movies?
Yeah.
He's only been catatonic for like 2 years.
That's a good point.
I mean, those crows wait a really long time to bring people back to life, right?
Yeah. Say what you will about the shitty second one, and it was shitty, but at least by, like, the minute seven, he's come back and is already putting on the makeup.
I mean, that makes no sense.
It doesn't need to make sense. I'm not there for anything to make sense except that I want
to
see
it. Sure as hell isn't making sense because he ain't supposed to put the makeup.
Oh, that's right. Somebody else has to put it on for him for some stupid reason.
No, there's no reason for him to have that same makeup. Because, yeah, he shouldn't have that makeup because Eric only wore that makeup because it was part of his band.
Yeah.
Don't you remember two weeks ago when Jimmy explained all this?
I remember that 2 weeks ago, but I also fucking think that by page 38, at least the crow in some form should be here, and he's not.
He is. He's catatonic. Oh, not catatonic. Well, yeah, he's catatonic. I'm with Byron.
He has weird scars on his face. I think that might have something to do with his crow look.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We'll see.
Yes.
Look at these variations all over the map. And this serum you incubated Civilcom in. Where the hell did it come from? Peering closer to screen. Where is this original animal subject thriving after 5 years?
The subject is thriving.
The subject ain't human, that's for sure. Not with this serum footprint. This isn't simian either. Looks canine, except for these mutated genes.
I'm not here to play 20 questions, not on my salary, not on yours.
You expect me to meet the FDA people on Thursday?
That's what I'm paying you for. And between now and then, I expect you to run all of these tests again and again.
All right. But it won't change one fucking thing about this fucking drug.
You're predicting the results of the test before you run them the second time. Hardly scientific method.
He moves to the door, turns.
I expect more professionalism on Thursday.
Thursday's professionalism day around here.
I'll try not to say fucking in front of the FDA.
Feel my glands, bitch.
He looks at her sharply.
What do you think the F in FDA stands for?
Fucking drug agency.
Exactly.
He looks at her sharply, goes out. Interior, animal lab, day. Terrell and Acer are waiting near some of the cages. Byron joins them.
She's going to crack, isn't she? Let me take care of her. Not yet. Billions are at stake with this government deal. I need Fields to sign off on the research or we'll lose the contract. After that, if she's a loose cannon, she's a loose cannon that goes overboard.
He gets in the elevator, leaves. Terrell finishes up with his cigarette, notices the chimp in the nearby cage. With a grin, he flicks the butt into the cage. The chimp eagerly picks it up, then howls with pain as he burns his fingers.
Stupid fuck, you never learn.
Rid.
A beautiful sunset.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Camera adjusts.
It's the smog.
We're in the sunroom. Cato sits by the window, head lolling, eyes vacant, collar wet from his own drool.
Told you.
This is drooling.
A janitor mops the area, moves a table lamp, a potted plant, and then Cato. See what they did there? He's like a lamp or a plant.
Yeah, we get it.
And then, you know, the next part really blows.
None of them seem to mind.
As opposed to the parts we've seen already.
You needed to talk over me?
Sam? I did. Shut your face. You don't talk right.
None of them seem to mind. New angle. As the janitor moves away, Badish appears, drained after a long day. She notices Cato, turns toward Waldo, who's moving a body down the corridor.
Waldo, can you get Cato back to the ward?
Right away, Doc. Gotta hit the freezer first.
He goes into the elevator. Camera holds on this corridor. The janitor has mopped his way down to a fire door. It opens behind him. We hear a muffled voice.
You ain't supposed to use this door. Go around to...
That's all he says before he is battered and kicked into silence by three junkies.
You couldn't have done fucking Bane?
You ain't supposed to be. Use this door. Go around to... You use the darkness.
They move as quietly as they can down the corridor. The leader sneaks a glance around the corner. His POV. Camera pans. The empty corridors. then moves to the pharmacy, closed at this hour. Back to scene, because we left the scene despite focusing on these same characters the whole time.
Kills me.
Leader.
Be on the lookout, by the way, from now until like the day we die, for back to scene in a script, because I don't think we're ever going to see it as long as we live.
At least not this much.
I've never seen it before, ever.
Who's the leader?
What, back to scene?
Yeah, I've never seen it say back to scene before.
It's in like screenplay, like when you're trying to find out how to write screenplays and the headings and stuff, you'll see it in there, and it's supposed to describe something that's happening outside a particular perspective of one of the characters, but it's kind of fucked up because a scene should involve everything going on in it, even if one character is in one side of the fucking planet and the other was on the other side. If you're cutting back and forth between them, it's fucked up, you know?
You're cutting back and forth, you just say intercut.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even have to do that if you establish it, like what's happening and the people can follow it. The whole trick about what we learn is that we can't get away with this shit. This is obviously somebody that's gotten away with it because they're successful, but the rest of us have to shave our shit down so that people don't look at dumb shit like
also,
that.
Also, this guy's not leaving the scene. He's not leaving the scene. He's not intercutting. He's just changing what the camera's looking at in the scene and then saying back to scene.
He's making a rewrite. He's making the director look at this shit and go, there's no fucking way I could even start shooting. I mean, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this shit? I got to rewrite it.
Oh, you know what? That's actually smart because the writer gets paid to do a rewrite. So if you write something bad enough the first time, but good enough to sell, when they hire you for a rewrite, you basically get paid twice on the same script. Now, we have a leader of the junkies and we have another junkie. So who's going to be who?
I'll be the leader. Fucking candy store, man. All right. Take what we need, sell less.
Hold on. Danny's going to be the other junkie.
I'll be the junkie, yeah.
All right, read your line again, Jimmy.
Fucking candy store, man. Take what we need, sell the leftovers.
Oh, what leftovers?
Laughter. Ending in a hacking cough. They're all sliding into withdrawal. They cross quickly toward the pharmacy. As they move, one of them draws up short.
Fuck, we're busted.
Camera adjusts. He's pointing to Cato. They freeze until the leader looks at Cato more carefully. He grins.
Busted?
He steps closer, flicks his cigarette into Cato's face. No reaction, even as the butt falls to Cato's breast and burns out, scorching his pajamas.
He's a fucking carrot, dick shit. Now open sesame.
The third junkie takes out lockpicks. With shaky hands, he starts to work on the door.
Come on. You said you're a pro.
I got the shakes, Eddie.
What are you doing?
New angle. Baddish has returned. Even as she asks the question, she realizes the answer. She spins, darts toward a phone. It's halfway to her ear before the junkie leader has charged forward, yanked its wires out, and pressed her against the wall.
You got a key, mama?
Get out of here. Now, before it's too late.
It's already too late, bitch.
He grabs her roughly, drags her to the pharmacy door.
Open it.
I don't have the key.
He slaps her.
I could have done that.
Mine was more fun, though. He slaps her again.
Don't have the key.
He looks at her, as pissed that she isn't afraid as he is that she isn't cooperating. Suddenly, he grabs the shoulders of her lab coat and pulls them down, pinioning her arms. Pinning, you mean. Pinning, not pinioning.
Yeah, not pinioning, dude.
He quickly pats her down.
No key, huh? No key?
Realizing
no fucking key?
Jesus, Eddie, we gotta get something.
Yeah, we're gonna get something, all right. Right now!
He looks at Baddish with a different expression. Runs his hand over her body again.
Oh, I do declare.
You're pretty fine for an old lady. You know that?
And in an instant, he knocks her to the floor. He kneels over her, but even though her arms are pinned, her legs aren't.
Yeah.
She kicks him hard.
Yeah.
Bitch, hold still.
Or her.
Kato, still sitting, still drooling, while the sound of the violation continues 10 feet away. I'm a hero! Da, 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 da. Back to scene.
My heart will go on.
The men take turns.
This is not what you want to do while you're going through withdrawal, by the way. Yeah. I just want you to know, people, this is not... This is how they be trying to figure out a way to get some coke off that bitch, no matter what, or something.
You know, junkies, they're just like a criminal lot, man. They just...
A superstitious, cowardly lot.
They just want to go around doing crimes. Like, they can't get their drugs, so there's... Hey, there's a girl. Let's do a girl crime.
A girl crime.
Gotta get our quota in.
Steal a bunch of tampons.
This is how this... Screenwriter thinks, apparently. Hey, what's a bad thing that could happen to a girl? Obviously, rape.
Yeah. Well, you know,
by homeless junkies.
Yeah, that is like the standard, you know, bad movie, you know, bad thing to happen to a girl.
It was in Training raped. Day.
It was in so many movies, dude. So many.
The men take turns kissing her sloppily, giggling. Then it gets serious.
Oh, okay. Then they're going to go to prom with her and stuff. It's getting serious.
The leader starts to rip open Badish's clothes. She fights him furiously, punching, biting, kicking. It's all the others can do to hold her down.
This is good music for that.
Oh, okay. Kato.
It's romantic.
No change unless a longer trickle of saliva counts.
Back him.
Back to scene. The leader takes out a knife, slits Badish's bra open.
And they just fucking whip out like tube socks.
Hospital windowsill, same time. The crew lands here. It peers
the crow, not the crew, stupid.
The crow. The crow, I gotta turn my brightness up, hold on.
your personal brightness in your brain.
The crow lands here. Well, it says...
I know what it says. You're right. I'm just fucking with you. Calm down.
It says the crow as if they've established a crow.
Yeah, they've never established
it. We've never seen any crow at all in this whole thing.
Yeah, in 42 pages, they haven't... You know, the only time it says the crow is on the title page.
Yeah. The crow lands here. It peers intently into the room. Camera tightens on it. Kato, is it our imagination? Or was there a flicker of a reaction in his eyes?
Are you asking us that in the directions, you fucking hack?
Yes, he is.
Jimmy's so mad.
God damn.
Crow at the window. Well, look.
It
breach hull, all die, even out under the line. It caws, flutters away.
The crows seem to be calling his name, thought Caw.
Back to scene, low angle. The leader unzips his fly, spreads Badish's legs. Suddenly, the second junkie looks up as two white-clad legs appear in the foreground. The third junkie notices them first. We follow him upward as he stands.
Hey, it's the carrot.
New angle. They all turn. Kato is standing there on unsteady feet, face still a blank cipher. Behind him,
I was looking to you for confirmation. I was like, is this really what the fuck?
Fuck you.
Behind him, the wheelchair finishes a graceful turn from the momentum of Kato's rising.
God dang it, dude. Damn.
The empty chair is spinning because it's empty now. God damn it.
Yeah, my God.
Because he stood up and from the fucking... Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Yeah. This is a great movie.
Get rid of him, please!
The third junkie snaps out a switchblade, swings it. Suddenly, Kato's arm is up to block the blow. The third junkie blinks. His POV, dark light. The knife is in Kato's arm, tilt up, expressionless, showing no pain. Kato looks at the knife. How did that get there? We almost hear long, dormant mental gears turning.
We do.
Yeah, we're hearing them now, dude.
We're hearing them right now.
Yeah, as we look at the writer.
Yeah.
Knife, perpetrator, victim.
Oh my god.
Back to the scene we're still in.
We're still here, folks.
The third junkie starts to giggle.
And we thought he was stoned.
We.
We thought we was stoned.
Wham. A fist ends his sentence.
Wham.
No, the period ended his sentence. What are you... On the floor. The other two junkies react as their friends slam down beside them. Nose shattered. Eyes blank. Teeth and blood leak from his torn mouth. What? Jesus.
Yay.
Back to scene. The two remaining he doesn't know what a scene is, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he's like, maybe he thinks it's like an animation when a scene
he's
is literally...
He's definitely misusing it. He is not using it properly.
Maybe he means back to the shot.
Because, yeah, in
animation... Maybe these are like...
In animation, a shot is a scene. Because when you hang out your shots to animators, it's a scene, but it's a shot, really. So maybe he's like an old school animator.
There's nothing on his IMDb to indicate that he's an old school animator, dude.
Well, then fuck him. I hope he dies. Is he dead?
I never did anything like this.
Is he
this,
dead so right just... now, Sean?
Oh, you know, I never thought to look.
Please tell me he's dead.
Actually, I don't care enough to look at it right now.
Oh, man.
I'll look between episodes.
Yeah, because he needs to be dead.
He needs to be dead.
Where the fuck are we?
Are we on time, by the way?
We're almost... Time is almost up. It's fucking 7:22.
The two remaining junkies leap to their feet. The second junkie charges... We hear the crack as Kato breaks his arm, then his
fuck,
knee.
Fuck, he's alive!
He is?
Yes.
Jimmy looked it up. He cared enough to know.
Oh, I thought he was talking about Kato, and I was like, obviously, what? I was very confused.
I know that's right, because I was upset that he didn't die, but I want him to be dead. This is what I want. That's Connie, at least.
Jimmy. Hate.
Hey, man, remember... If anything happens to Jonathan Gems under mysterious circumstances...
We got nothing to do with it.
It would be irresponsible of the police not to at least call on me.
We didn't kill him, but we made his death that much more.
I mean, I won't have killed him, but I'll have dreamed about it every night until it happens.
You may have manifested it.
Uh-oh. He's got something I want.
Uh-oh, what do you got?
Did the critically acclaimed graphic novel reboot of Will Eisner's classic comic character Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and I heard about that.
He also did a Will Eisner spirit movie in the 70s that I never knew about. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, good lord. Yeah. He's still working. He's from Philly. You know, your neck of the woods.
Oh, he's probably writing those M. Night Shyamalan movies.
He's my people. Oh, then you know what? Fuck him, because he probably wrote Devil.
He didn't actually write any of those. I just figure like two hacks
yeah, right.
coming together in Philadelphia.
In that area.
And making it,
yeah.
Against all reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's more of that established, you know, screenplay guy. Because, I mean, Shyamalan may make shitty movies out of Philadelphia, but he at least has a gigantic farm to do it on.
Yes. Okay.
Moving on. Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, but, you know, Chappelle's way better.
Moving on. Two remaining junkies leap to their feet. The second junkie charges. We hear the crack as Kato breaks his arm, then his knee. Kato spins, kicks. The second junkie slams into a water cooler, which erupts around him, the water turning red. The remaining junkie punches Kato in the face brutally twice. There is absolutely no reaction. It's like hitting a wall. The junkie has the presence of mind to block Kato's return punch. And then he howls as Kato reaches down. Uh-oh.
Oh!
New angle. Don't as Kato...
Wrong kind of howl. New angle.
As Kato grabs the guy by his...
Oh, fuck you.
Well, by something we remember is exposed and convenient. And...
You're supposed to tell us. It's not a riddle.
Penis.
Spoilers.
He's got an issue with penises. That's his problem.
I can't believe Danny's first interjection in three episodes is to just go, penis.
Yeah. Been waiting for the right time.
Well, that was the right time, actually. That was exactly the right time, so
Kudos. I mean, this guy's probably just like a real prude.
Oh my god.
Man, can you imagine his conversations with his fucking urologist?
By something you remember I exposed earlier when you were giving me the tests.
And even though we can't see it clearly, we weren't going to show his penis graphically in 1997 that you can't even say the word of. The hysterical scream from the junkie gets the idea across as Cato whirls, spinning him around until his feet are off the... spinning him around by his cock until his feet are off the ground.
Well, the cock does act as a fulcrum to the whole body, so...
Then Cato lets him go.
So true, so true. Socrates couldn't have been wiser.
The last junkie gets his wish. He gets into the pharmacy. There's a sickening crash as he goes halfway through the wired glass and dangles there, 4 feet above the ground. New angle. He moans and passes out.
No drugs!
Bleeding from a dozen cuts. Back to scene. The sounds of combat are now ringing alarms. The sound of combat and now ringing alarms bring security guards and Waldo running.
That's my alarms.
Holy shit! Dr. Badish!
That's two separate characters, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
He helps her to her feet. Danny, you need to do more voices because Jimmy has one voice.
Yeah. Oh my god, you guys! I'm going to do this voice!
Holy shit!
Wow, it's fucking Marty McFly.
He helps her to her feet. She pulls her lab coat closed. Already, she has the presence of mind to take Waldo's ID card from his lapel and use its clip to secure her own modesty.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Waldo. Mm.
Jimmy, stop.
Come on, Waldo.
Stop.
I'm sorry, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
He's trying to rub one out. He's thinking about
I'm trying to keep the bile down. All right. Are you okay?
I'm fine. In fact...
She moves over to Cato, who now slumps to his knees, drained. She peers into his face, takes out her little flashlight to look in his eyes. As she hoped, he reacts.
I couldn't be better.
Hey!
Oh, we got two security guards.
Why not?
No,
oh my god, this line is
great. We have an echo.
Okay. Jimmy, you're not the security guard anymore. Danny, go.
I got it.
With hey again.
Hey!
All turn. Focus change. He's by the pharmacy.
Where's this guy's dick?
As Badish looks down at Cato's hand, suspicious, we cut to getting the fuck out of here.
Fade out.
Tiresome, Sean.
Hey, man, the crow showed up and ripped the guy's dick off. The fuck more do you want?
I don't know, a good movie. But I guess that was kind of stupid.
Yeah. I can't go past 7:30, guys. You guys gotta call this off.
All right, so Jimmy is tapping out.
Yes, he is.
Oh, man, can you believe we only got one episode more done today than we typically would have?
Yeah.
I told you before, the worse they are, the longer.
I blame you because Sean was like, you know, I was like, you know what, Sean, let's do this. We'll do a day long thing. And I said, I'll give you a full day. And Sean's like, all right, I'll be over at 2.
Well, I did have a meeting about a job at noon.
No, I
and
feel
Danny
you.
Danny couldn't make it till 2 anyway. Then Danny ended up being late.
That's true.
I'm not saying anything about your character.
That pizza break kicked my ass. Because I'm sitting up here eating my pizza and drinking my stuff and all this other shit while you guys... And then I'm like, where the fuck are they? And I started thinking, are they just sitting back eating pizza? And they're just like leaving me on hold?
No, Jimmy, most of that was me outside on the phone with the pizza delivery guy trying to get his ass here.
The guy didn't find us very easily.
Ah, good. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's for the audience to know.
We spent like 2 minutes actually eating pizza. We just... kind of opened up our esophagi and just jammed that shit down. And see, we wanted to make sure we were on break when the pizza came because we've been criticized by our friends at the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Can you turn that down some? Jesus!
He's fucking on the beach with that shit, boy.
It's not that loud. I don't know what's wrong, Sean.
It's at least as loud as me.
It's nowhere near you.
Anyway, yeah, we've been criticized by our friends on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network for accepting a pizza delivery on the show.
But, I mean, that's when it arrives, so, you know, what are we supposed to do, guys? Duh.
I don't know, but it just makes it seem more real and affable. I don't know, why would they not want a delivery?
Anyway, it is true. Jimmy's very old. 7:30 is about his bedtime. So we gotta stop recording now.
Yeah, I know you guys have fucked me all up, man. I gotta take my fucking Geritol.
I need my ointments.
And also
he's black, so you know you gotta put some lotion on.
Yep, but yep, I think, after that Epsom salt bath.
I think the real question here, though, is, Danny, are you down for coming back and finishing this script some other time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Danny's having fun. Down.
Way to be a trooper, Danny.
Danny's having a lot of fun. He wouldn't know it to talk to him because he's been very quiet, but,
Look, man, it's tough coming into, like, someone else's established thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling it out.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know?
What do you think?
He'll spread his wings. Kelly took her time, too. Jimmy didn't, because Jimmy just always pushes his ass right into whatever the fuck. He doesn't give a shit.
Rude fucker.
Well, Jimmy's got his name, though. Like, people say his name before he comes on, so he's all like, I don't have to work. Jimmy's like, you know, got an introduction. He's part of the... Jimmy figures he's part of the work, of the woodwork. Is that what I'm saying?
Well, I figured that even though I didn't know you guys when I first saw you in the fucking Denny's. And I was like, wow. Oh, that's my crew. It just hasn't happened yet.
Wow, you see that? He's been stalking us. He's been fucking trolling us this whole time.
See, I didn't even know that shit. I didn't know he was checking us out at Denny's.
You don't remember, I must have told you guys that's how I first saw you. You guys never saw me before Andre?
I never saw you before you worked at the movie theater.
I must have been stalking then, because I saw you a bunch of times, especially at the Denny's.
I mean, if you went to that Denny's a lot, that's where we lived.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I went to that Denny's all the time, and I remember the first time I saw you guys, it must have been after the Renaissance Fair.
You know what?
Because you guys came all in with all that gear on.
That shows you just how fucking baller we were back in those days, because we literally took over and lived in the smoking section, and for the most part, none of us smoked.
Yeah,
you guys were very gregarious, very loud, very charismatic. I saw you guys.
Man, I was looking. I saw y'all.
Yeah, and I was there with Andre, seeing you guys. Man, you guys just didn't know we were creeping
up.
That's on
why.
You.
That's why we. That's why you're a part of the crew on Touche El Douche, Jimmy. Which
that's what Andre said. He said, "Remember those guys from the Denny's?"
Hey, Jimmy. Trevor was segueing. That means shut up.
Oh, burn.
I was slow.
Hey, so man. All right, Jimmy, if you want to get out of here, man, take off, because...
I'm out of here with all the fucking insensitivity in this Trump era. It's fucking killing me.
Yeah.
All right, man. Fuck, Sean.
7:30 tomorrow, baby. We're recording.
Fuck!
All right, man. Peace. And, Danny, you got anything you want to plug?
Well, just like to say thanks for having me, guys. It's been a good time.
Well, if you want to thank us, then come back for the next recording session with us.
Will do.
All right. Sean, do we have other stuff to plug?
Hit tablereadspodcast.com for all the Table Read stuff you can stomach and more beyond that. Also, follow our entire production cycle on Twitter at the Ferris House. You'll have posts whenever any of our podcasts post. And visit all our good friends over at rogueintel.com. They're fantastic. There's some good shows over there, and they won't insult you like we do.
The voice of Table Reads is Art Carlson. Hey, that's kind of meta. Meta. This podcast was created by Sean McBee and produced by Ferris Wheelhouse.
FerrisWheelhouse.net.
Fuck.
Cut to black.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.